This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi sisters, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout, we know.
We're cultural observers.
And of curious minds.
Get ready for sisterly banter while we chat about fixations, learnings, and personal growth.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood!
Hello sisters, welcome back to this month, August's installment of Mental Health Chats. You just have me today, Scout, since this is the corner of the internet where just I live without Mads when it comes to OK Sis Podcast. But I am so excited for today's episode. I have Emily and Jennifer on. They are the owners of the therapy group as well as the podcast hosts of Shrink Chicks, which I was on. I will leave that episode link in the show notes if you want to hear that conversation as well. And when I was on their podcast, you know, I did a lot of podcast appearances for my book launch of The Emotional Entrepreneur. But when I was on Shrink Chicks, I just connected with Jennifer and Emily so significantly. It just fucking clicked. These are my girls. I love their message. They are the therapists I wish I had 10 years ago, and the way they approach therapy, how they're revolutionizing the space. And essentially, I feel as if they're just taking therapy and fucking dusting off all the old shit and bringing new life, new energy into it. So having them on OK Sis Podcast for my Mental Health Chats installments was a no-brainer for me. You guys are going to love them if you don't already listen to Shrink Chicks Podcast. They are also on Podcast Nation Network, so we are network sisters. In this episode, we do a pretty deep dive around therapy, which you sisters know is a common theme on OK Sis Podcast. So this one really gives us an in-depth look at, one, how these two therapists run a business, two, their new model approach to therapy, and three, how you can be a better patient if you are looking to get into therapy and really, really want to take your healing and emotional health into your own hands. So before I let you all sisters into this episode and hear this conversation, which I really hope Jennifer and Emily are coming to Southern California soon because I need to meet these ladies IRL, I just wanted to let you know that if you have bought my book, The Emotional Entrepreneur, thank you so much. I see all of your DMs, all of your reposts on your stories or all your posts on your stories that I am reposting. It is such a fucking honor to see you with my book. And since this episode is all about therapy and mental health and emotional healing, if you haven't bought my book yet, The Emotional Entrepreneur, I will leave the link in the show notes as well. It is the emotional guidebook to entrepreneurship and has 25 of my most important, main, poignant healing and mindset lessons that, yes, help me in business, but even if you're not an entrepreneur, these lessons can really transcend into all areas of your life. So I would be honored if you would get my book, if you would read my book, if you post about it on Instagram, I will see you and repost. Sisters, your support means the world, and thank you for always showing up in spaces where we can talk about mental health openly, where we can talk about our emotional healing, and where we don't feel necessarily the shame or the stigma, but rather the encouragement and the motivation to walk through the fire and to really prioritize our lives. So I love you, sisters. I hope you love this episode, and I will catch you later. Okay, sisters, I have the two coolest therapists. I think that, you know, I didn't even know therapists like this existed. And you all know, sisters, I've been in the therapy game for like 15 fucking years and have dealt with everything from, you know, 75-year-old cat women who have a bunch of dogs and animals in their room. I've dealt with women telling me to, therapists telling me to just rub my nipples to get me in the mood for sex with my partner. I've had a male therapist who talked about himself for 30 minutes before we got into it because he was a therapist for reality TV shows and he thought that was really cool. So I got to hear about that. And I'm just kidding. There were a lot of amazing therapists sprinkled in. But we all know that in my past experience, it was a time when therapy wasn't what therapy is today. And I believe that you two, Emily and Jennifer from the Therapy Group and Shrink Chicks podcast, are the answer. Like, it's a fact. The answer. answer to the new age, new model, new generation of therapists. So say hello, ladies, because I love you.
Thank you for saying that.
And we will say this. There's a lot of shitty fucking therapists out there.
It's the reason why we built our practice, truly, because we wanted to build a practice, the therapy group, that was a group of therapists that are very down to earth and people you can actually connect with. And it came out of our own shitty experiences in therapy where the therapists just put up this clinical wall and there was no real ability to connect to them as human beings. And so we know the most important aspect of therapy, the reason why people do the greatest work, is the therapeutic relationship. So we are right there with you on that.
Okay, for context, how old are you both?
I'm 32.
I'm 33.
Sorry. We have to give context because we're not talking to like 60-year-olds here. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we're young. We were in grad school about 9 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, okay, so we started grad school 10 years ago. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. So 10 years ago, we first went to grad school.
Time is
confusing. You know, I'm like, it's 2019 still, right? I still literally think about like pre-pandemic. It's very confusing for me. We went in. We were younger. We went there. We were two of the younger people in our programs, I think. It was a lot of career changers. And I think that, one, we went to a program specifically. We are licensed marriage and family therapists. But basically what that means is we don't just work with couples and families. What it means is that we think about everyone within their system. Everything we see is systems. So how you and your sister relate to each other are also how you related within your family, how you've related within jobs, how the mental health industry has treated you, right? We exist within context. That's how everything in this world is. And so because I think of this model that we chose to go with was incredibly helpful of seeing people as not just one, a diagnosis, not to pathologize them, but to see you fully of who you are, of all parts of you.
Okay, so I have so many hard-hitting questions. And
ready.
Before I ask them, I just want everyone to know that I am beyond a fan of what you're doing because I think that it's very different and it breaks the mold of what I think with therapists. So I have questions as to how this works, right? So let's talk about the fact that I went to see a doctor a couple years ago and we were talking about vagina stuff and he's my age. And I'm like, what is happening to me? Because doctors are always older than me, very similar to how therapists are always older than me. So how do you feel, or what approach do you take to, one, just your age, not to be ageist, but one, your age? Because I feel like when we think of the traditional therapist, they're 50 to 75 years old going on like their fucking retirement. And I think these beautiful blonde women who, you guys are Jewish too, right? Yeah, we talked about that, which is crazy. I'm meeting so many blonde Jews these days. It's like blowing my mind.
This is fake. I mean, it's very fake. The blonde is fake.
Got it. So what is your opinion on that? Have you found it difficult? Have you found it to work for you, against you?
Yes.
I think it does both. I would say, especially at the beginning when we first started and we had a ton of imposter syndrome, that was really tough for us. And something that we've learned over time is that the client that wants an older therapist is going to go to an older therapist, right? Like that there are clients who are going to want a therapist who is their age. And it really depends on what you're looking for in therapy. And the fact of the matter is that there are some people who are going to connect with me, some people who are going to connect more with Emily or other therapists. And the thing that we say is most important is that we don't really take that personally, because the most important thing, once again, is that you feel comfortable and connected to your therapist. And for some people, they want someone who's older and some people don't. So we've just learned to not take that personally and know that it's not necessarily about who we are as clinicians. But I would say when we first started, that was hard for us.
Well, I think we also came from, so we worked somewhere together before we started at our private practice, and it was all older clinicians. And I'll tell you this, this is one of those jobs that people do stay in a little too long. There are people.
I got a recommendation for a therapist for someone else, and I was like, oh, I'm looking for someone who's real older. She was 90.
Listen, 90. And so I know we sound ageist right now, but there is a part of sometimes people stay in any type of field maybe too long. And also, right, like, and often a lot of times those people are not reading up on new literature or learning new things or growing with the times. A lot of times people learn what they learn in grad school and then that's all they take with them. And that's a problem because that's not how the fuck our world works. None of that makes sense.
Next question. And we're going to get into how you approach therapy, how you approach your relationships with the people who come to you, because I think it's, I mean, like, I want to know if you talk like this in the rooms, all the good stuff. Do you find, and I just thought of this, because you are millennials, you are obviously a very new breed of therapist where you understand the value of a personal brand, you understand being on Instagram, you have your Shrink Chicks podcast, which sisters, I was a guest on, I'll link that one in the show notes so you can go listen to. Do you find that boundary setting with your millennial clients is difficult? Because I can imagine that when I have a therapist who's much older, like, I just inherently know not to text her. You know what I mean? I just inherently know that on a Thursday night at 10 o'clock, like, maybe I shouldn't text her. But maybe if you were my therapist, I might text you. Does that happen? And how do you create boundaries around kind of the millennial work culture of being available at all times?
I think it's first of all, a phenomenal
good
question.
Good question, yeah.
Because I think that part of learning to be a therapist is learning how to set boundaries. Emily and I are really good at learning how to do that with people, only because we recognize that in order to take care of our clients, we have to set those boundaries outside of the session so that we can function as human beings. And so you learn over time as a therapist how to say that in session without breaking the connection or the relationship, to say, hey, listen, texting, you know, is only going to be for scheduling. If there's ever an emergency, this is what an emergency looks like. This is how we go about it. You kind of set it pretty early on. But I do think one of the things that's been a little bit challenging for us is with our podcast, we're talking about ourselves a lot. We're talking about very personal details about our lives. And so it's boundaried off in a way because our clients can make the decision to go listen to the podcast. We're not bringing our personal stuff into the session. The session is all about the clients, but they get the choice to go and listen to the podcast and hear about our lives personally, which I think is different because, you know, kind of the old world way of doing therapy is that the therapist is very much a blank slate and you know nothing about them. So I would say that for me personally has been a little challenging for my clients to know more personal details about me, and they get the choice to look at that. And sometimes they bring it into session and we have a conversation about it.
When you, like, you reveal something and then they come in.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'll say this, people that are going to violate boundaries are most likely going to violate it no matter what your age is or who you are. Right. So if, and I will say this, I'll have clients that, like, you know, we live in a world where you, like, want to send a meme to your therapist. I'm actually fine with that. A
me
client
too.
Can text me a meme. I'm not going to answer it most of the time, usually because I'm tired at night and I'm, like, putting my kid to bed. But I'm actually totally fine with that. It means that they want to connect with me and they want to share something with me. And I think that that is, like, an honor and a privilege for people to do that. So, like, the thing is, like, so in your first session, you do something called informed consent. And informed consent is when you talk about the rules, quote unquote, of therapy, right? Hey, if you call me up and tell me you have a bunch of pills in your hand, I have to call 911. If I'm working with someone who's, like, a child and they tell me they're being abused, I have to report that, right? And so, like, in this informed consent, one of the things we also add in is, there's going to be times where I don't text you back because I'm also with other clients or with my family or doing something else, running the business. And so what things that I'll do is say, hey, send me an email. And in the subject of that email, you're going to write response needed, if it's needed. If not, I'll get that email, print it out, and we'll talk about it in our next session. But just so you know, you have to give me some indicator. Like, this is an active and collaborative relationship. We believe that it is not coming from a one-up position that we know more than you. We are here to help you figure out your shit yourself and to collaborate with you and go on that journey together. We're working together. That's it. We're very, very active in that belief that this is a collaboration of two people.
I think a big part of that too is that the relationship that you build with your client, they're going to take that model of relationships and bring it outside of session. And so if a client were to say, okay, anytime I need something, I can text my therapist and the therapist will respond, start to develop a level of dependence, which isn't healthy either. And then you take that model of relationships outside and you feel, okay, I can do this with everyone, right? And then my relationships, you know, are built around me depending on other people. And so part of having healthy relationships in general is that you're able to set boundaries for yourself.
The other day, my cousin looked at me and asked if I got a treatment in my hair. I said, no, but I am taking Nutrafol. You see, sisters, I had some shedding issues postpartum when it came to my hair, so I made it my mission to support my hair growth and strengthen my hair. I mean, Mads, you saw my hair last time I was up in LA, and you even complimented me. Which, sisters, you know that when Mads compliments me, it's a big deal.
I do have to give this one to you, Scout. Your hair is looking thick, strong, and beautiful. When it comes to hair thinning, it's complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker and stronger hair.
Every morning after I eat breakfast, I take 4 pills, and it becomes a seamless addition to my morning routine. But the reason I decided to go with Nutrafol when supporting my hair health is that Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Oh, also, Nutrafol makes the best Mother's Day present, especially for new moms. The perfect way to show them that you care about their postpartum support.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OKSIS. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OKAYSIS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OKSIS.
You know, as we talk about boundaries and we have that informed consent, it's also modeling healthy relationships outside of the room.
So good. And it brings up a lot. I want to tell the anecdote of, you know, I decided to go with a coach for the last 2 years versus a therapist because, and maybe I suck at boundaries, because there was like, we're on Voxer and I can voice note her during the day and she texts me back. And I felt as if within my emotional, you know, for me personally, I needed that extra attention. But we were always so mindful of like, she doesn't want me to be dependent on that support over time. And she's incredible about boundaries over when she responds. It's kind of just like email for her, you know, after 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, she's not going to respond. Weekends, she's not going to respond, et cetera. And so that level of support for me was so helpful in the beginning. And now she'll check in on me and be like, hey, I haven't heard from you in 2 weeks on Voxer. Obviously, we have our weekly meeting and it kind of like weaned off, but it's available for me. So for me, that was so integral, but we're both very cognizant of this is really needed in your journey right now. But the point is not for you to voice note me 25 times a day for everything that you do and be dependent on me. So I love that.
And she did something specific. She made it safe. She made it safe that you didn't have to, right? She was honest. She was trustworthy. She didn't have intermittent reinforcement. By her having that same consistent boundaries and honoring them, that actually allowed you to do that. That's beautiful work. We fucking love a coach, man. I love a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the model of therapy that you guys are providing is in line in many ways with kind of some of the good coaching industry kind of vibes, which of course there's bad coaches, there's good coaches, bad therapists, bad good therapists, etc. Can we talk about the wall? Because I struggled for many years. Well, the first therapist talked about his reality TV show shit show life, which was crazy. That was my first therapist. And so I thought that was normal. But then I started entering therapists and I was like, do you have kids? Like, have you ever had, like, what's your biggest challenge in your life? Or are you from San Diego? Like, stuff that I had zero idea. Are you married? I mean, literally nothing. And it bothered me. It really, really, really bothered me. And I just didn't know who I was talking to. Am I talking to a human with experience or am I talking to the textbook stuff you learn in school? And can we integrate both? Because I feel like both is where the magic happens. And then I had a therapist who I told the story on your podcast. She was truly one of my favorite therapists because she told me her son had schizophrenia. She told me she deals with a lot of dissociation. She hugged me. She actually used physical comfort at times, which is a very taboo thing, but it was very consensual and like we would go to these, she had like support groups on Monday where we would wrap each other in blankets and everyone would put our hands on it to feel like physical safety, whatever. It's very different stuff, but it was all consensual and like I understood. And she was so there for me in the sense that when I was going through a hard time, she was like, take the office next door. No one's there. Work with me. I'll give you a hug every hour. And so I loved that. I really did. That really worked for me when she would tell me what she would do with her husband when she needed to spice sex up, rubbing of the nipples, etc. And so that made me feel as if she understood me because we had some similar stuff. However, I can see that relationship being way too far for a lot of people. So how do you deal with, you know, maybe they listen to your podcast, as you said, etc. What does that relationship look like when you interject yourself into the scenario, et cetera? Where's the balance there?
Well, it's funny because I can remember very specifically in grad school during our training, they said, if someone's going to eventually ask your age, right? Like someone's gonna be like, well, how old are you? Like, are you even old
Me.
Enough?
On this podcast, first question.
Yeah, right. But here's the difference. We were told to respond with, well, what would that mean for you, my age? Why would that be important to you?
Like turn it back around on them.
Oh God, I would kill you in 2 seconds.
I remember being like, yo, if that happened to me in the initial session with a therapist, I'd be like, I'm never going back to this person. That was so fucking uncomfortable. Like I was just trying to know you.
Yeah.
That's it. Like I was literally just trying to connect and I don't know, gauge you in some sense of the universe. And so how insanely bizarre that the first thing was like, actually, let me reject you. Let me take your very reasonable request and let me reject you and make you dismiss you.
Yeah.
Right? That to me does not work. So you're right. I think that there is a balance. And I think this is going to be the most unsexy response, but communication is what makes that difference.
Yeah.
The other thing is like, there's a difference, especially when you're a woman therapist, right? Like you're going to be wearing an engagement ring or they see you be pregnant. So there's certain times where like, you can't hide parts of your life, right? When I was very clearly 9 months pregnant, Michael, like I wasn't going to be like, well, you know, what's that mean to you, right? Like, I'm just pregnant, okay? Right? So there's like certain stuff where you like can hide. Like one day you're not wearing a ring and the next day you are, your clients are gonna notice a difference. And so you have a choice, which is to connect with them over that or dismiss them completely and make them feel alone and a bit shameful.
There was another time in grad school where as we were learning, I think I said something like, oh, it's so good to see you. And I was told, you can't say that. And I was like, why wouldn't I be able to say that? And they were like, because you're making it about you. And I was like, no, I actually feel like I'm happy to see my client. And so we were taught certain things in this field that we really didn't agree with because it was really in conflict with what they were also telling us of like the relationship and building the relationship is the most important thing. And so how do you build a relationship if you're completely leaving yourself out of it? Now, that doesn't mean we're going into session being like, oh, I had a really tough day today. Let me tell you about my day. But if there's things that come up, like if I'm going on vacation and they're like, oh, where are you going? Like, I will say where I'm going, you know? Like, I'm not going to be like, well, what's it mean to you where I'm going? Like, how weird would that be?
Okay, but this is just reminding me so much because that is the therapeutic model that I was raised in with my disorder. And there's kind of a parallel. This is really far off. Let me know if this is resonating. There's kind of a parallel in the content creation world where people don't understand how fucking smart the audience is. Like Lauren Everts and Michael say this all the time. The audience is really smart and they know when they're playing you. And just because someone has a mental health problem, like they know when a therapist is playing them. Like they know. And so that was the thing for me. I was like, do you think I'm this fucking stupid sometimes? And it's the exact same in content creation. Like we don't give people who come to us for whatever it is credit for how smart they are.
And we very much believe, like when our clients are coming in, they're the expert of their own life. Like they really do know more than us in terms of like
yes.
What's right for them. And it's our job to help guide them and help them figure that out. And I think that that's also a different way of thinking about it, that there was this idea in the past that the therapist is coming from this like one up power position. And as we said, we come from a one down position that in the end, you are the expert of your own life. I can give you guidance. I can, you know, use certain models to guide you. But in the end, you are in control of your decisions and you're the expert on that. It's not our job to tell you what to do with your life.
Okay, question one. I just want to outline this out loud so I don't forget. I want to talk about some of the experience behind the scenes of what it's like to be a therapist on your end, how you take care of yourself, the emotional, energetic world of that. And then for the sisters, I really want to talk about how we can be better patients to therapists, because I think that being a better patient allows our healing to get better. So coming to a therapist for the wrong reasons or having toxic views of what the therapist should be for your own healing versus how much you have to actually do the work, etc. But before I get into those two different perspectives, because I think that's very interesting, like what are some things that going into therapy should you keep an eye on as the patient so that you can make this the best experience for your healing? What models do you follow? Do we do CBT? Is there any, or is it a blend? Do we do some spiritual stuff, energetic? Like what's the stuff?
So we're mainly using humanistic, what's called humanistic models, right? Which is like a CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. That's following a very specific thing of like tracking your thoughts, right? What we believe is that people are completely full and they have many different parts of ourselves. And that's coming from internal family system. Did you ever watch the movie
Inside Out?
Inside Out.
Oh my God. I don't understand how perfect, how simplistic and yet packed a motherfucking punch for your heart they did with that movie. I'm going to watch it tonight.
Okay, so that's based on internal family systems model, which is what we do. That's when we talk about systems, that's what we're talking about here.
Just say you do the inside out theory.
Let's do the inside out therapy. That's what we do. All the different parts of yourself and that they are all valid. Every single one of them, and that they're there to protect you. That's really what all of this is about. Your feelings, your emotions, they're not evil, they're wonderful, they're guidance, they're information. And how do we reach all of it with curiosity? So every model that we do like a mixture of like internal family systems model, what's called feminist theory, which is also that like that when you talk about this clinical wall, it's also very patriarchal. That's also coming from Freud of like these, you know, these women are histrionic and like, right? Like that. And it's also gatekeeping of mental health, which is once again, a very patriarchal thing. So what we believe in is that we are all humans, that we are here together. And how do we work together? There's also a theory called narrative theory, which is like the stories we tell ourselves and the stories our families have told to us and how we that then blends in and creates a lens for how we see everything in the world. And so we're using everything that's meeting people exactly where they're at.
Oh my God, this is like everything I believe in that I had to just figure out myself instead. You know what I mean? Like I just through trial and error of what emotionally worked for me and what didn't work for me. This is the exact part. Like I was in my coaching session yesterday and I decided to do a lofty business goal. And my first initial reaction was, fuck yeah, let's go. This is the best thing. I'm so excited. And then this part of me was like, oh, am I going to be seen as too masculine, too hustling? Like, you know, da 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 da. Like I felt I was making myself wrong for that. So my coach had me name that part of myself who feels judged by society for the way that I work. Her name is now Beatrice. And I talked to her like, hey, you know what I mean? Hey, Beatrice, like I'm here for you, etc. But it's not shaming that part of me, but integrating it and knowing that it's a really beautiful part of me and exists for a reason, which is to save me.
Absolutely. I love that. She did such amazing work in that moment. And I think that there is something very important of saying like, yeah, like all this stuff is really very much to protect mm-hmm. you. When you had that initial reaction, I'm too much, I'm too masculine, I'm going to be judged. What that's saying is, I don't want to be abandoned. I don't want to be neglected. I don't want to be alone in this world, which is truly like we're all connected. That's what we want, is to just be seen and validated by others. It sounds incredibly simple, but something that's simple doesn't mean it's easy.
Right. And sometimes so often we, you know, if we reject those parts of ourselves, if we say, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this way. And I think that that happens so often is that we say, I should not feel this way. And sometimes, and I hate to say this, CBT can in a way keep us from like acknowledging some of those feelings. So being able to say, okay, this is telling me something, right? Like, how do I integrate this part of me instead of push it down and say, I should not be feeling this way? Because, you know, when you say that to yourself, you're invalidating your feelings.
Oh my God, that's so true. The idea, I understand the idea that our thoughts are not real, but our thoughts are telling us a story because of something that we need to listen to. So, wow, never put that together that at times CBT could say, this isn't true, moving on. Instead of, wait, why did I think that? Where is that coming from? And then getting to the root.
And that's why we, you know, CBT is helpful in certain ways. That's why we struggle with CBT a little bit because it doesn't hit the deeper pieces.
It helps you with the behavior change, right? Like if you want to stop something specific, you know, like they do like CBT for like, you know, compulsive OCD behaviors or something. But I don't believe that those things are bad. I believe that they can be an inconvenience, but I believe society has told us those parts of ourselves are bad or not normal. They're not mainstream enough. And I'll say that, like, we're licensed marriage and family therapists, but our field of MFTs, we're a newer field. Like, my license in the state of Pennsylvania, my number is under 1,000. This is a newer thing. That's why this model feels insanely different. And so when you're looking at someone who is like a psychologist, there are amazing, wonderful psychologists out there, but some of them are being trained by people that were trained in the 1940s.
You're explaining everything that I was feeling. And this is not, I just want to go back and reiterate many times that I've had incredible therapists who were from the older model, et cetera, that really, really fit with me. And I think that's the important part about finding the right therapist. But when I started talking to you, I just didn't know that this new wave of therapy was coming out, that this was the new frontier, because this, look at my dog, that she's like the third, she's always.
What's he trying to tell you right now? All parts of him are good. What does he need?
I always say you're safe in your emotions, Looney. You're safe in your emotions. It's okay, baby. Get it all out. You're safe here. Anyways, yes. So this is why I'm just so fascinated and excited that you two exist on this planet doing this work, because I just feel like it's so, so necessary. And all of those things question, and you don't have to respond if you don't want to. What are your opinions on kind of like the Dr. Nicola Perez of the world and the work that she's doing? Do you find that yeah, look at your faces. Do you, or maybe you're looking at my dog, I can't tell. Do you find that stuff empowering, or do you find it maybe potentially harmful?
So you talk about the holistic psychologist, which is a controversial to talk about. I think for white privileged people, she's amazing. Do I think for people of color that have experienced hardship, that deal with systemic racism and oppression, she's helpful? No, I believe she could be dangerous in that sense, right? But she's actually not doing anything that new. She's just taking from Carl Jung's model.
Which is like pretty much what all, like, therapists just take from each other and put another name on it.
Every model is based off of the same kind of shit, and then people just rebrand it and make a lot more money off of it. So it's phenomenal branding, but it's actually taken from internal family systems theory and all of Carl Jung stuff.
Yeah, but I love, yeah, which is, you know, in all industries, artists take from other artists, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
I think what she does so well is bring it to people in a mainstream, like utilizing Instagram to help people understand basic ideas of this kind of stuff, breaking it down really easily. But yes, I just wanted your opinion on that really quickly. Okay.
That, I was just going to say, that's the tough thing about Instagram therapists, is that everyone is different. And, you know, you present something that, you know, might connect to certain people and really not connect to other people. And I think that, you know, because Instagram is what it is, or like even on our podcast, like we say certain things that might connect to certain people and not connect to others. Yeah. And so I think to also remember that, as if you're scrolling through Instagram and you're seeing these messages, like sometimes we'll put up quotes that once again apply to certain people, and other people will comment and be like, oh, what about in this situation? I'm like, yeah, totally. You're right. Like, it does not apply in this situation. So
take what works and leave the rest.
Exactly.
So if her work works for you, that's amazing. Get everything out of it you can. I love free content. I'm obsessed with people putting good information out there. Take it. And if it doesn't work, leave it.
I think that's so important that you just said that, because I think that in the similar way that not every therapist is right for you, not every piece of Instagram content around healing, psychology, therapy, even spirituality is made to talk to every personal human experience. And so as consumers of content, we should really also be very cognizant of that, because I think what happens is we see an Instagram therapist post and we get really riled up because that doesn't apply to our specific situation. And so, yeah, just offering some grace in the fact that these things, not everything's going to work for every single person.
Yes,
absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit how you protect your energy as a therapist. But I think the most valuable thing for the sisters would be how to show up as good patients, how to make sure that if you are seeing a therapist, if you've chosen a therapist, which, sisters, you've been listening to me for 3 years. If you're not in therapy, I don't know what I'm doing wrong here. Let's talk about, because I think that this is really helpful. I think I went into therapy and was very passive with the situation, was like, the therapist is going to fix me. And so I necessarily didn't take super radical responsibility over my healing. So if anyone is either new to therapy or has been in therapy for a while, but maybe isn't hitting their breakthroughs, et cetera, what are some good ways that we can walk into the therapist's room and be ready to go to work?
My first thought around this, and this isn't a direct answer because I'm a therapist. Therapists never give direct answers. But my first thought around that is that therapy is such a journey. And I think that with certain clients that the beginning is really just getting comfortable in therapy, especially if you've never been to therapy before. And I think that sometimes that can take a long time, especially you're with someone new and you maybe you have never talked about some of the things that you want to talk about in therapy. And that is really, really hard. That can take, you know, months to years to come out. And so part of the process sometimes is really just getting comfortable and finding your footing in therapy. But I wanted to give a caveat, that kind of caveat to what I'm going to say, where something that's really helpful is when clients come in and they're ready to do the emotional work, right? I think it's really easy and helpful in a lot of ways to just, you know, go in and just dump all the stuff on a therapist. And there's no, it's not really collaborative. And sometimes we just go into vent and just let it out. And sometimes that can be really helpful if we're needing that space, but it's not getting down to the deeper root of things. And you're not, you know, kind of figuring out, well, what's going on for me right now? So I think really going in and saying, okay, it's not just about venting and dumping. It's about how to get underneath and find the root cause of this. But once again, the reason why I gave that earlier caveat is that sometimes that takes time to feel comfortable enough doing that. And that we know that, and we know that therapy is such a journey, and that we're okay, you know, we know that it takes time to get to that place. So even if, you know, it's your first few sessions in therapy, you're like, I'm not really ready to get down to the things that, to get down to my trauma or like talk about some of the things I've never talked about in my entire life. We're okay with that. We know that those things take time.
Yeah, you're so right, because I don't think that the way I show up now in my healing, I couldn't have done it. I literally needed 12 years of just venting and sitting and being a victim or getting comfortable moving into certain areas. And then it like snapped and I was like, oh, I'm fucking ready. Let's go. And now Every session I'm like, let's do it. Go in. It's going to be uncomfortable. I'm here. I'll admit it. Like I am so in the, I almost go really fast now, but it took 12 years of figuring out my therapy journey, going to different therapists, seeing what felt good, venting, talking, letting them talk, whatever, all this stuff to get to a point where that was what I was ready for.
And so I think just being patient with yourself too, and knowing that if you have the right therapist, if it's a good fit, they're going to know that this is a journey. Like we've been through this over and over and over again with clients. We're well aware that that's, you know, you're not going to tell us, you might, but for the most part, you might not tell us your deepest, darkest secrets, trauma, anything that you've dealt with right off the bat. We know that and we're okay with that. Like it's our job to kind of hold the space for you so that you feel like you can get there.
My advice I'm going to say is if it's not working, go see someone else.
Totally.
Right? Like the number one thing, like you're not going to offend anyone. Well, you might, but then that fucking therapist is not doing their own work and that's their shit to deal with, right? Which is that like, don't try to make something that work that doesn't work. For whatever reason, energetically, spiritually, the alignment isn't right. Sometimes it's not a match. And so I would say like, be honest with you about like, even if you heard like, even if someone's like, oh man, this girl's on all these podcasts and she's successful and look at all these people, and then they come in and they're like, oh, I don't like it, but like, she seems like she should be a good fit. Like, look at her name everywhere. Like, don't come in.
Yeah, no.
That's okay, right? Like, there will be someone else. And so I think sometimes we can write a story about someone else. This person will fix me because they have all the degrees, or because they have the pretty office, or because it's my friend told me they fix them, right? Like, one of the best things you can do is listening to yourself. And also, like, I love the idea that there's different modalities. Sometimes we can't talk to do something, right? But you can also walk into session and say, hey, I'm having a lot of trouble bringing up something in session. I wrote it out in my journal. Could you read it here? Or could I email it to you? That's okay if you don't have the comfort and the verbiage to do it. Sometimes writing works, sometimes bringing in a meme. Like there's so many different ways to try to communicate. Be open to all of those. And sometimes we make suggestions, read a book, a journal. Sometimes everyone ignores those and puts it right out the window.
Right, yeah, like the amount of times clients will be like, I didn't do my homework. And yeah. I'm like, it's okay. I get it.
And that's fine. But what would it be like if you did? What would it be like if you actually read the book the person brought up, or listened to the podcast, or did the journaling, or listened to that internal monologue? You know, what if you actually tried to implement them, that we're not just saying random shit to get through 50 minutes, but because like we genuinely think this could help you.
Mm. question, which this segues beautifully. I need tough love. I never wanted it until like 2 years ago. Me and my husband fought all the time when he would try to give it to me, because your partner cannot be your therapist. We all have learned this. You know, it's a difficult dynamic when one's trying to help the other. But I need tough love in the sense that if I don't do my homework in 2 sessions, like, I need someone to say, what's going on? Like, what's not happening here? Like, I'm not just going to let you off the hook, etc. Obviously, if like the homework isn't working for you or if it's not in alignment, but you know what I mean? What's your opinion on tough love in that sense? Holding your clients accountable? When is it appropriate? When is it not appropriate? Is it appropriate in therapy? How does that work?
Well, I would say to dive into like what made it difficult to complete that, like what was hard about, you know, getting through that homework, you kind of do some processing around what the barriers were to completing it, because I think that in and of itself might give you information, right? The information might be as simple as I was too busy this week, or it might be as deep as I'm not ready to go there, right? Like, I'm not ready to do that work. And even talking about the fact that you're not ready to do the work is doing a little bit of the work to be able to say, here's the barrier there. So I think there's a place for it. And once again, you know, I know I'm a bit of a broken record with this. Everyone is different. There might be some people who are like, I need that tough love. Like, I need you to hold me accountable. And maybe they're not saying it, but you learn that over time as you build the relationship with your clients. And it's very different depending on the person.
With my clients, I like to think about everything on a spectrum of directive and collaborative, right? So like when I think of a client, I say, okay, this client works best in collaborative, so she'll be more over here. Or this client works more with directive, so it's over here. But everything's on a spectrum, right? At one stage in your healing, you may be at a more collaborative state. And another stage, you may be more of a directive state. And that's okay. How do we sense of where you're at? And also, if I know something about myself, if I know, listen, it's actually like triggering for me when you're super soft, like there's something about that doesn't feel safe, or like when you don't bring it up, it makes me feel like you also don't care about this work. Like, there is a big part about like it being an active collaborative process that you have to show up and say, here is exactly what I need from you as my therapist, and here's what I'll give you as the client. That you should get a voice. And that's what we talk about, it is like we are all on the same level here working together collaboratively. So you tell me too what you need from me, and I can be honest about what I need from you.
So good. That collaborative part is something that I think personally that I was missing. And so I just want to reiterate, if anyone's listening to this, you might need years before you get to the point where you're really ready for that collaboration part. But I do really want to plant the seed in others' mind that part is, a lot of beautiful things happen once you get to that point in your therapeutic journey with therapy. And so I like to emphasize that is available in therapy versus just coming and passively either venting or just learning how to even express emotions. At one point you get to be collaborative and you get to kind of take more action. And I think that's really an exciting part. That's really exciting to work towards, if that makes sense. You two, I'm obsessed with you two.
We're obsessed with you
two. We're obsessed.
Wait, because do you know how many clients I've actually bought a bunch of copies of The Emotional Entrepreneur and I have given it out to clients?
It's phenomenal.
Oh my God, did I do a good job?
You did amazing. Such a good job. We're so proud of you.
Oh my God, I have the therapist stamp of approval. I won't actually use that as like a credible situation, but in my heart, I feel like, can we talk really, really quickly before we wrap up this conversation, which it's a shame you don't live down the street from me. The entrepreneurial part of what you do, because you guys have the therapy group. I'm assuming you are co-owners in the situation. Mm-hmm. Do you have other therapists working in the group? And how do you balance being a therapist and being an entrepreneur at the same time? Because being an entrepreneur is emotional. And then you're like, let me talk to everybody's problems all day long. Like, oh my God, you guys are masochists.
So yes, that's true. We've really had to learn as the business has grown. So yeah,
we have 20 clinicians.
Yeah, I think we have over 20 clinicians. We were losing count. Holy so yeah, shit. We have had, I know, as the business has grown, we have really had to learn how to boundary off like our therapist self and then our entrepreneurial self and our podcasting self and just, you know, being our human selves where we're just taking care of ourselves and being there with our families. But we've really had to learn how to boundary things off so that we can get in the mindset. One of the things that I think Emily and I really had to learn is asking for help. It was something hiring help. It was something that was really hard for us when we first started building the business, is like giving up that control because it's our baby. And, you know, we have recognized that when you find help that's that really is supportive and believes in what you're doing, it's so much easier to give up that control. That's one of the things we had to learn. It's a way in which we also are able to take care of ourselves and take care of our clients and take care of our business is also asking for that help.
The hardest thing ever to like relinquish control. It is so much harder than anyone really understands, or just managing that many personalities or roles, et cetera, within the ecosystem. I have 4 full-time people under me at my agency and 20 clinicians. I feel for that significantly. That's a very big accomplishment. You two should be very, very, very proud. I am proud of you. I'm honored to know you. I am so grateful that the space has 2 women like you. If anyone is listening and is like, they need to be my therapist, what city are you in again?
So Jen and I don't take on new clients, but we have amazing clinicians that work just the way we do in Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. What am I missing here?
I don't know. It's growing.
You can go to therapygroup.com. And you can see exactly which clinicians are in which states. So we only have like brick and mortar, like in-person locations in Philadelphia and Westchester, Pennsylvania. There is more to come, but virtual in all those other states. And you can go to thetherapygroup.com and see all of our amazing, life-changing, the best people you could ever meet.
And our clinicians all follow the same model of being down-to-earth therapists, that we make sure that the people that we hire are very much connected to what we put out. And so as we grow, you're welcome to reach out. If we don't have clinicians in your state yet, we could put you on a wait list. Yep. Until we find these amazing clinicians.
Amazing. And do you take insurance?
No, we do not. We don't it's private pay, but we have an amazing internship program that allows you to see people for $30 to $50.
In the state of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Amazing. Beautiful. And then can you please let everybody know where to follow your podcast on Instagram? Because if they don't live in those regions, but they still want to soak up everything that are the two of you, there's so many other ways to get involved with you two ladies.
Yes. You can just check us out on Shrink Chicks anywhere you'll get your podcast and on social media, and everything is linked there.
Yay. Okay, sisters, I hope you have a beautiful day. I hope this episode was inspiring, informative, and allowing you to take one step deeper or start one step further in your therapy journey. You can follow me at Scout Sobel, and obviously you know where to find Okay Sis Podcast.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of 3. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.
Love you, sisters.